And here we are.
They said be there, and
here we are. That's our job, right?
That's right.
Is
to show up.
Show up. Be here now.
Be here now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit redundant, but there's a lot to it.
Be here now. Redundant. Slightly.
Not redundant.
Slightly varied.
It reminds me of when people say to you, how can it be that simple? And you say, it's simple, but it's not easy.
Yeah. Or people talk about something in time and space.
Uh-huh. Can you say more about that?
Well, to me, it's another one of those. Is there one without the other? Is there? Can we really separate these?
Yes.
And yet, we certainly have different experiences of those.
In the sense of?
Here and now, we have different experiences. Sometimes when I talk to people about center and the number of words that we could use to express that same experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's endless.
Yes.
It's an endless list.
Yes.
Being here and now on that list, but also kindness, compassion, mm-hmm. peace, joy, mm-hmm. love, receiving. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. Accept, embrace, let go. They're all the same thing. You can't. It's not that one follows the other. They're all the same experience.
Yes.
So this may all be just one thing, you know, as those Buddhists keep trying to point out. But we're going to sneak up on that idea gradually.
All one thing. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, not even. Well, that's redundant, right? All one thing. So all is one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, one is all.
Yes.
Yeah. And so if we were to say a thing, then thing, all one thing. That's now if we got into things, then we're going to toss ourselves into the world of duality. But you couldn't say all one things.
Yes.
See, so we're safe there.
Yes.
Yeah. It's funny how we know this, but we manage to avoid realizing that we know it, recognizing that we know it.
Uh-huh.
I was talking to someone earlier today about this fellow whose name I cannot remember, and I can't remember actually what he did. He's a really famous guy, though, who lived in the 1800s sometime, somewhere.
Yes.
You know, the details of a story are never that important to me, and I can never remember them, so what difference does it make? But he went to a demonstration. Have I talked to you about this?
No.
Where this fellow was bending spoons with his mind.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yes.
And this fellow got it, that it wasn't a trick, it wasn't faked, that's what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But this fellow had nowhere to put that in his mind or in his life.
Uh-huh.
If he accepted that what he had seen, what he had just witnessed, was true, it would turn his whole world upside down. Because there was nowhere in his world for bending spoons with your mind. But if one person can do it, obviously it can be done. Obviously it's a real thing. And then what does that say about this shared reality that we're devoted to killing one another to prove that this is the right one and the right people are in this one and anyone who doesn't see it that way? I mean, all of that stuff would just really be called into question.
Mm-hmm.
And so he acknowledged that he walked out of that and said, that never happened.
Wow.
Not it's untrue or it was a fake or a phony, just no. I, as they say, can't go there. Now, we all do that. We don't, not with perhaps as much consciousness as this fellow did it, but we all do that all the time because the implications for what we know are just too alarming for us.
Yes. Amazing.
Did you have something you wanted to say, Michael? Did you notice this was one of those launches?
I always have something I want to say. I'm not always sure what it is. But, you know, the sound of my voice talking, as I've shared before, proof that I exist, that I'm
real, I'm here.
I'm real, I'm me.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed the whole part about Welcome to Open Air with Cher Huber. So
I had noticed that too. I just talked right over the top of your introduction.
Well, I gave you a little feed there to go.
Mm-hmm.
And if people want to call us today, they can reach us at 650-723-9010. In fact, we already have somebody on the air here, on the line, rather. And if people want to email us, they can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. If they cannot get enough of today's show and they just want to sit on the internet and listen to us for the next 24 hours, they can go to cherihuber.com, CHERIHUBER.com, and they'll find archives of all of our shows there.
Wow.
Great.
There is no reason ever again to be bored.
No reason to be bored.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we talk to people?
Please.
I'd like to welcome Albert from New Jersey. You're on Open Air with Cher Huber.
Well, hi.
Hi.
Hello, Sherry. Hi,
good
Michael.
Evening.
Yes, hi. How are you folks?
Very well.
Great.
That's good.
And yourself?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. What's going on?
What's going on? Well, I'm maybe a little out of context because I had a choice between my internet connection and this telephone, so I haven't been able to hear the beginning of the show. But
you can go to the archives later, right? As we have established, and catch up.
There you go. So I'll jump right in.
Okay, good.
Well, I wanted to ask. This is kind of something that I think I've probably spoken to you about before at some point. And I know you've spoken about it's kind of a pendulum effect of or a pendulum experience of kind of practice and life
mm-hmm.
a little bit, and it's reflected for me in that I have a sense at times in my life where I'm having things are going well in terms of I'm taking care of myself, I'm taking care of myself physically. Exercising, I'm eating healthfully, I'm sitting regularly, and it's reflected in a general sense of, reflected in a general sense of well-being and things being as they should, and
mm-hmm.
things seem to go well.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I find myself somewhere else, the other end of the pendulum, where I'm not eating healthfully, I'm not sitting
mm-hmm.
regularly,
mm-hmm.
and I'm feeling. Well, frankly, like things are really not going well at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of it is I think my own. I've identified for my own personality a somewhat of a depressive nature, and were I to experience enough of a higher energy at the other end, I'd almost think I was manic depressive. But I've never quite made it there.
Mm-hmm.
Manic end. At any rate, So I wind up, I guess the question maybe is a little twofold. On the one hand, I wonder sometimes when I find myself in these situations, I find myself wondering whether there isn't a little bit, it was kind of like a chicken or the egg question, whether or not things are going as bad as they are because I'm not taking care of myself and I'm not sitting, and if I was, blah, blah, blah. Or have I forsaken taking care of myself because
right.
I'm feeling so bad and all
right.
of that.
Right.
And there's that, and then there's also just a sense that because when things feel on the bleaker end of the pendulum, I find myself remembering that I was in a much better place, and how did I get so lost, and
mm-hmm.
is there something, sometimes I feel like there's something like my practice is being tested, and it's not there,
mm-hmm.
you know, like is there something I could be doing that would make this happen less easily and less often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kind of practice tip or something.
Yes, yes, there is. I think what you're pointing at is it's just the fundamental piece of the puzzle for all of us, and it's not one that we get to very often because of exactly what you've laid out. And what I mean by that is this. If there weren't somebody constantly watching you, monitoring you, labeling what your experience is, comparing it, telling you how you feel, what this means, well, does it mean that? Maybe it's this. Maybe you, that person, and person has to be in quotes there for me, but that person is what I call the illusion of a separate self. And if Now, this is one of my favorite places to go with it. So if that person took on weather instead of Albert, can you imagine how absurd it could get? Now, we can imagine it because people that we call primitive, which I find very humorous, actually do that process with the weather.
Okay.
Right? So it's raining. It rains for a long time. What did we do wrong?
Yeah.
Why are the whatever it is mad at us? Maybe we need to sacrifice a baby goat. Maybe a virgin. Maybe we need to. Okay. So to me, it's exactly the same process. It's just that when it's the weather, to us, that is so childish, so primitive. It's silly. It's ridiculous. But we do exactly the same process with ourselves. And of course, this, sending receiving station that each one of us calls I, is just as vulnerable to the elements, which would include every factor in life that affects us. And so, not stepping back and recognize, because we can't step back and recognize it, because the illusion of a separate self, that yank voice that we're constantly turning to for information, is telling us, in essence, you are the center of the universe,
right,
and you must be doing something to cause this. If you did that, I don't know anybody, no matter how sophisticated they are, who doesn't wake up in the morning feeling like they're going to catch a cold, who doesn't say, oh my God, what did I do? What caused this? Where did this come from?
Right.
As if having an intellectual understanding of the process of catching a cold is going to make a difference.
Right.
Yeah. Now, of course, the making a difference piece of it is the way we were conditioned. So if I can figure out what I did wrong, then I can clean up my act, change that behavior, and never find myself in this position again. And we watch it, I'm obsessed with the example of the airplane that crashes. And everybody goes into what happened, find the black box, so that we can find out. And then what do we have? Does that mean a plane will never crash again?
Right.
No, because it's always something different.
Yeah.
So we really don't know anything by analyzing the past to try to make up, in my view, a series of causes that we could influence in the future and then be able to have control over our lives from now on.
Yeah.
So to me, bottom line, for what we're doing as people practicing awareness, this is, as far as I can tell, the only thing we can influence. And that is the amount of conscious, compassionate awareness we bring to ourselves in all circumstances.
So there is really just what is in the moment.
I suspect.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So, it isn't really just that I'll be looking to what may have happened in the past to get me to wherever I'm at. It's kind of like I start looking at, and at the moment, the particular situation I have that's kind of that I'm associating with my state of affairs so there's a situational depression kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some real circumstances mm-hmm. that are difficult to deal with at the moment. And so I'm saying to myself that it's a combination of my own cyclical depression mixed with some real situational depression.
Yeah, as if that makes a difference. So we look at the weather and we find out that the reason that this is happening is that there's a high-pressure area here combined with a low-pressure area there.
Yeah.
And the huh-huh comes in from and it's like, what? Does that make us warmer? Does that pay the heating bill? Does that, what do we have as a result of that? Now, I'm not arguing for ignorance, because that's all very fun to know. You know, that's fun information to have. However, I don't know if you've read this, but I'm reading Bill Bryson's A Short History of Nearly Everything.
Yeah,
well, let me tell you, it is a short history of experts being wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, they lay it out, they figure it out, and then 20 years later or 100 years later or whatever it is, everybody goes, well, wow, we were really wrong about that.
Yeah.
Now, for that period of time, everybody feels better because we understand that this is happening and that's melting and that's moving around. And so we all think we know something. But in fact, we don't know anything. We really, honest to God, don't know anything.
Right.
So, you know, you have this cycle of depression and it's affected by exercise and what you eat. And then something happens in your life. And kind of, so what? You know, here's somebody who doesn't feel as well as he could feel. What shall we do for him?
Yeah.
How can we help him? He doesn't have to justify
right.
how he is. He doesn't feel that well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, that's all we can really do. Okay. And
yeah.
even if you had been on a binge for the last 3 weeks. And, you had consumed most of the alcohol in New Jersey. You know, we still do not need to place ourselves in a position of saying, all right, you deserve the way you feel.
Right.
You need to be punished because you have been a bad person and you've brought this on yourself.
Yeah.
You know, compassion, no matter what, compassion.
Yeah. And neither is it particularly helpful to try to figure out exactly what circumstances led to the consuming.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of like, where are you right now? And what
where are you right? What do you need right now?
Yeah.
The Buddha actually did a whole routine on that, to where you walk out and there's the guy lying on your front step with a knife sticking out of him,
right.
and you say, wow, wonder who he is. Wow, wonder how he got there. Oh, huh, That knife looks familiar. I think my dad had one. Meanwhile, the guy is
right.
bleeding to death.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So what do we do instead of being here, facing this moment, bringing to this moment the maximum amount of compassion that we can muster? What are all those things we do? Darn near everything that little voice of conditioning is yammering about all the time.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, you got a direction?
You bet.
Okay, thanks, Albert.
Well, thank you.
Good night.
Good night, take care.
Thanks for joining us, Albert. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can give us a call at 650-723-9010. Sherry, it sounds like you're suggesting I could just go on living my life with or without that internal
Don't you think?
Commentary.
Don't you think, really?
Mm-hmm.
Because what is it arguing for? Except that there's something wrong, and guess who's at fault? And you need to be punished.
Yes.
And where really has that led us? It
yes.
just doesn't get us to any good places. I can't think of anything that is improved through criticism, judgment, cruelty, punishment. It's mm-hmm. not a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are probably people out there saying, but what about Hitler? But what about, this is just what conditioning does, to argue for its position. I was looking at this on Sunday morning at group at the mm-hmm. monastery. I what was occurring to me is that on the outside, there are supposedly degrees. Right. So you get a different punishment if you shoplift an ink pen than if you kill the clerk.
Yes.
Okay. And it's kind of a no-brainer. Obviously one is really serious and one is not that serious. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's bad. We need to punish you if you're mm-hmm. going to be shoplifting, mm-hmm. but we're not going to kill you because it wasn't. So
yeah.
out there, everything is that way. These are the expensive items. These are the less expensive
uh-huh.
items. This is the, everything has
comparison.
Yeah, and levels, and you can, but internally, it's all the same. Uh-huh. It's all the same. It's all a capital offense.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if it's that you ate dessert,
mm-hmm.
or that you stole something, or that you didn't feel like talking to your mother, or you feel like you didn't have the right outfit to wear to the or your hair doesn't look that great, or somebody... A total stranger looked at you odd. Yeah. It's all the same. It's all a capital offense. The bottom line is you have to die.
Yeah.
And it's not quick. You know, externally, we have compassionate, you know, we kill people as compassionately as possible, right? So we determine, gosh, that electrocuting them, that doesn't look like a good idea. So
yes.
We'll gas them. Oh, well, that... Gosh, that seems like a rough way to go. We'll give them an injection. Okay, so we're concerned about killing people nicely. Internally, that's not going on,
yes.
Right? You have to die. You should die.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a slow, agonizing, miserable experience
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that fascinating.
Yeah, so no matter what we do.
No matter what. No matter what.
It's equally horrible. What we've done.
And if it is anything real, well, then we can make something up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go. You can have a voice going back 20 years.
Absolutely.
Your life, there's nothing going on right now. That's right. Your life is going great. You're successful. Your relationships are working. You know, you're a good person. Well, but remember, you blah, 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 20
yeah.
years.
Yes.
And, you know, and you're meant to feel just as bad and...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a crazy system.
Crazy.
And people buy into it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We do.
Wow. Let's talk to another caller.
I'm ready.
I'd like to welcome Mary from Colorado. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry.
Good evening.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I was in the workshop in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a situation where I was in a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And you gave me some exercises to do, and I came back the next day, but I didn't talk to you about it like I said I would.
So, aha! Clearly, you are a bad person.
Well, I felt like I had gotten what I needed from doing the exercise, but and then I just didn't find a good time to jump
uh-huh.
in.
Well, it was a little busy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to say was, what I noticed was that it seemed like there was a subpersonality that seemed to be the person who's in pain all the time.
Uh-huh.
And then the rest of me isn't in pain all the time. And in fact, I was saying, why did I lie and say I'm in pain all the time when I'm not?
Uh-huh.
So it's like I've split that part off. And it stays in pain. So whenever I'm in pain, I go back to that part and be that person.
Yeah. I mean, I know there's more, and I don't mm-hmm. want to permanently interrupt you.
Okay.
But I think what you said is so important. There is a part of you who is being in pain.
Yeah.
In the same way that most of us have a part of us who is angry or who is depressed or who is compulsively neat or a good daughter or whatever it is. It's a particular aspect of your personality who does pain.
Yeah.
And that's really, it's hard to get, isn't it? And the thing that is so... critical about what you said is looking at yourself and saying, why did I say that? Why did I say I'm always in pain when I'm not always in pain? And of course, what I hear in that is because you were able to see that because at that moment you were not identified with that part of you who is in pain. You were identified with somebody else who said, I'm not in pain.
Yeah.
Isn't that? And that's true for all of us. We're doing that process all the time.
Right. And so my question has to do with when I do choices in my life, like I need to choose a new career,
mm-hmm.
do some training, and
mm-hmm.
start making money.
Mm-hmm.
And So I'm looking at myself and I'm saying, okay, well, sometimes I'm in pain, so I want to look at what causes that and avoid things that will put me in a lot of pain all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look at other things, like sometimes I make mistakes that are really stupid, so I want to avoid being responsible for things where I shouldn't make mistakes, like I don't want to.
You're not going to pick brain surgery.
Exactly.
Got it.
So I want to be able to use that critical judgment, but it's like knowing when have control. You know,
can I offer an alternative?
Yeah.
Okay. And that is, rather than letting that critical judgment in there, okay, how about letting those decisions arise from center? Because, you know, from center, there would be an awareness that, you can't do something where you have to sit in one spot and not move all day, because that would be really hard, or, you know, where you have to stand up or whatever that is.
Uh-huh.
I would look at that if I were looking at getting a job at something, right? So, I mean, anybody would. Uh-huh. So what are your physical assets and what are places of difficulty? But sometimes I make, was it stupid mistakes? There was a description that went with the mistakes that had, it sounded a little more loaded than, say, mm-hmm, your best friend saying, well, you know, Mary, you're really good with numbers, so you might think of it, okay? Didn't have that feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, there's a good chance that we're sliding over into something that is just designed to make you feel bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, because from center, from your heart, from that, you know, from the present and clarity and a compassionate awareness that has no investment in you feeling bad,
mm-hmm,
there's a realization that everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
As long as we believe that there are things called mistakes, then everybody makes them.
Yeah.
So that's not a good reason. that's not to me a legitimate limitation. Now, if it's something like, what might it be? You have some kind of learning disability, or you have some sort of condition that, you know, maybe you can't remember things or that, mm-hmm, sort of thing. Then you want to take that into account. But those don't get called stupid mistakes.
Okay.
Or ridiculous or dumb or whatever the, you know. So that would be my encouragement to you. That,
okay,
instead of trying to solve a problem, this is true for all of us across the board. Instead of trying to solve a problem, what we need to be doing is getting to center. Because everything we need to know, all the decisions we need to make, all the clarity that we're looking for, it's available when we're at center. It's never available to us when we're off in conditioned mind trying to figure things out.
Okay.
Yeah. So that clarity, that insight you had about the pain and about the aspects of the personality and that sort of thing, that came when you were centered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That wasn't that critical judgment figuring it out, because it would have made that nasty.
Okay.
Yeah, that would have been a mistake. You would have been lying. There would have been a lot of judgment attached to that.
Yeah, I got a bunch of that first.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then,
yeah,
I said, why am I doing this?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're feeling the difference between being in that critical judgment and at center, and we're going for the at center, which to me is the whole ball game. That it really is all that matters. When you're there, you'll have the work that you like, that you want. And if you don't like it and want it, then from center, something else will happen.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Let me know.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Mary. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Mary. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Coming up at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca and DJ Foe with At the Cafe Bohemian. They always play some great world music, so stay tuned for that. And then at 8 p.m., we have CW. We're going to take a break here, and we'll be back for more of your calls. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We've had a very exciting first half an hour.
Just right out of the, what are those, the shoots or the blocks or the
right. whatever that metaphor is.
Images are of bursting onto the scene.
Yes. I thought you were going to say in the zone or something like
no,
that.
I grew up in cowboy country, you know.
Yeah.
And the rodeo where I grew up was just, you know, bigger than Christmas. Christmas was like, who cares? You know, rodeo now. We're talking. And so it's when you're there and the bull rider, uh-huh. you know, signals and uh-huh. they open that gate and...
out of the chute.
Out of the chute.
Is that
yeah,
how it goes?
I think that's it.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
We have another caller here, Sherry. I'd like to welcome John from Los Angeles. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
I have to say I'm completely amazed because I had no expectation to actually even get on the air. So
great.
I literally called 30 seconds ago.
Well, the thing we can know is you have very good timing.
Well, thank you. I can't tell you how grateful I am just to be speaking with you. I've been reading your books for quite a while and listening to the radio show and very, I don't know if the word fan would be appropriate.
We are of like minds?
I would really hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a great gift if that was a true statement.
Well, I suspect that it is.
I participated in the online class.
Uh-huh.
And I think, for me at least, where I seem to be getting stuck is in some of the language.
Mm-hmm.
There's a discrepancy. I wrote a little bit about where I feel like there's some sense that the conditioned mind has its own existence, and what seems to be confusing for me is how it's being served by trying to distract me from engaging in the world in a healthier perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that is true. It's a Buddhist orientation to life that is not actually that different from a Christian orientation. I think this is true in Islam. I'm trying to think if it's true in Judaism. I don't have that same sense, but the recognition that there is a force in life that is not interested in things going well. So you can. I think when I said that, it's even when I heard the word force, I thought, well, we even have it in Star Wars. We have it in, you know, we have it in everything. Actually, everything that we see in movies and books and all of that is around that conflict between the light and the dark, the good and the evil, the knight and the dragon. However it gets framed, it's talking about the same thing. And I talk about it as egocentric karmic conditioning. Mm-hmm. And but it's pointing at that. It's the illusion of being separate from life. That's so, you know, in Christianity, I wasn't raised Christian, so forgive me. Were you?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was raised Jewish Buddhist.
Oh, okay. Michael, were you? Well, maybe.
More or less.
Yeah, maybe somebody can call in. But I think Lucifer decided that he did not want to be a part of God's deal. He kind of wanted to go out on his own, start his own show. And he wanted to be as powerful as God. So that's the biblical, I think, framing of that kind of struggle.
Mm.
And Lucifer, of course, does not, under any circumstances, want to be a part of God.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want forgiveness, doesn't want inclusion, doesn't want love, doesn't want, you know, that's the whole thing. I hate all that stuff. I live somewhere else. I have a different focus. Okay. And that's essentially the relationship that karmic conditioning has with us.
Yeah, I guess my confusion arises in the, at least from a feeling point of view, and I've been practicing for almost, I guess, 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I started with the Buddhist Foundation, and I was a student of Trungpa Rinpoche's for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess linguistically, I get confused in that my experience tells me that that you know sometimes it's very challenging, and I do feel separate. Mm-hmm. I do feel like you know that my place within things is challenged by my feelings of separateness and loneliness, and you know the challenges that life presents, and then practice sort of orients me towards the possibility that this isn't true.
Yes.
And then in language, I guess sometimes, at least in more going into depth of the work that you seem to be doing, my projection, I feel like there's a life, not just the duality of it, but there's a life force being given to the ego conditioning that's sort of being, saying, well, okay, there is no I, but there is some sort of force that has a vested interest in me not sort of being connected in deeper ways.
Yes.
And I guess that sort of anthropomorphizing is the only word I can think
well,
of.
Well, again, people have come up through time. Every civilization, every religion, every spirituality, psychology, everything attempts to point at what that is. What is that? what keeps this going? And so, in Buddhism, are you familiar with the hungry ghost idea?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, what do you call that? What do you say about that? How do you explain this force that is invested in this way, that behaves in this way, that remains outside your ability to affect or influence, that continues on regardless of what? I mean, how would you frame that?
Well, isn't the Buddhist perspective that the hungry ghost is a realm of existence, a completely separate realm that they can point to, but isn't necessarily one thing or another?
Well,
I mean that was my understanding.
Right, but you see, to me, you've accepted that language.
Hmm.
You've accepted that language and that framework, and that makes sense to you because that's what you
well,
got.
I'm not saying it makes sense.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. None of this does. None of it does on a certain level, but that's acceptable. And so what I'm talking about is the same phenomenon. It's just that it's a different language for talking about it. No, I don't see the hungry ghost realm as being separate and something that we're not influenced by, if that's the way you laid it out. I mean, to me, it's a huge influence in people's lives. It's
it is
exactly what I'm talking about as egocentric karmic conditioning.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess my disconnect is in integration.
Yeah. Well, I would say the disconnect is in intellectualizing.
Mm. Yeah,
because,
I've heard that before.
Yeah, because you have an experience of it, and then what in my lingo. What I would call conditioned mind gets a hold of this as a way of keeping you separate.
Mm.
So once you recognize the experience that we're talking about, you could hear a fundamentalist Christian talk about the devil and know, go, well that's okay, that's what we talk about as hungry ghosts, or that's what we talk about as egocentric karmic conditioning. This person is over here talking about the shadow, and go, oh, well, I think that's
sure.
what they mean. They're pointing, that's their way of pointing at this same phenomenon.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think sometimes just the emotional ramifications of the disconnect are difficult, so it's easier to just sort of try and think about them in terms of how I can understand them better.
Yes, and now in my paranoid little approach to life, I do not think that level of questioning and doubt and whatever accompanying dissatisfaction or unhappiness that goes with it comes from anywhere but the source that we're talking about.
It's interesting. Paranoid's a great word from Greek.
Uh-huh.
It means knowledge on the side.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I'm not sure. Well,
Are you with me on that, though?
But you're saying the conditioned mind is this, and my questioning is arising out of the same space that's keeping the disconnect in place.
I would be very suspicious of that, yes. So instead of, here's a little encouragement, instead of allowing it to direct your attention at it. Instead of it being able to lure you into this circular thinking, trying to figure this out intellectually, watch the process of being lured into an attempt to figure something out intellectually. Watch what happens to you in that process.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm so grateful, though, by the way, for your works and what you're doing in the world.
Well, and let's keep the conversation open.
Okay.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Sherry.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, John. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 650-723-9010. And they've been calling.
Yes.
And they're still calling.
Isn't that wonderful?
Isn't it great?
Yeah. We appreciate that.
We appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
What would we do if people didn't call?
Talk to each other.
Talk
but
to
that's
each
another,
other.
You know.
Which is fun for
fun.
A while.
That's right. But then it's fun to have them join us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to welcome Rebecca from New Hampshire. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Good
Hi.
Evening.
Hi to both of you. I'm so glad that you do take calls.
Yes.
It's very exciting to be allowed to call in and talk with you.
Well, good. What should we talk about?
Well, I called in, I don't know, maybe like a couple months ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was calling before because I was experiencing a lot of stress with school and just feeling really overwhelmed,
mm-hmm.
and those kinds of things, and you gave me some assignments to do, and I just wanted to
give me an update. That's right.
And what's been going on with that?
Okay.
It's been really interesting because, you know, as soon as you gave me my assignments, which was to focus on being not stressed.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to focus on being not stressed, and I just noticed the voices that drive me to do things and do things. And not only was I doing things, but I was overdoing everything,
mm-hmm.
sort of overachieving on every level that I possibly could, and trying to fit as many things into mm-hmm. one day as possible.
Mm-hmm. For reasons that you had never examined or explored.
Right. And I mm-hmm. think that I was even using spiritual practice as a reason for doing it,
mm-hmm.
just saying life is giving me this opportunity, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was, and I just started to look at, you know, just to dig deep and see who was really being hurt in there,
mm-hmm.
because there was a part of me that was crying and sort of saying, no, no, I want to slow down, I want to stop, and I want to rest,
mm-hmm.
and just starting to listen to her.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, because we at a certain point, we have to ask ourselves, now, what is this for? So
yeah.
here I am. I have all these great opportunities. I want to do all this stuff. Oh, this is great. And then there's somebody sitting there crying, saying, please mm-hmm. stop, please stop, please
mm-hmm.
stop. It's hard. It's hard to rationalize that, isn't it? To make this all this stuff I'm doing into this important spiritual thing when I'm doing it at the expense of this person who's sitting there crying.
Right, the very deepest part of me,
mm-hmm.
the one who wants the spiritual thing,
mm-hmm.
or who I thought I was doing it for.
Yeah.
So it just became so clear to me that I was doing it for suffering.
Yeah.
It was a direct route.
Yeah.
To suffering.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
It's so difficult to see because it's just the opposite of everything that we're being told.
Yeah.
Right? I feel great. I feel wonderful. I have this spiritual opportunity. This is fabulous. I can do all this stuff. That's all the information I'm getting. Mm-hmm. How could that be serving suffering? How is that mm-hmm. possible? And then,
very possible.
Very possible. Yeah, it goes on long enough until you... You can find this person's crying gets louder and louder and louder, and
and obstacles just seem to be coming up, and just so much resistance, and it was like adding to the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so then it's just I started to listen to her, and just really become quiet
mm-hmm.
inside and say, okay, what can I do for you? And I started asking for extensions. I started canceling different things that I thought I would do, and I started to have a nicer time and enjoy what I was doing so much more because I wasn't thinking of the 30 other things that I had to be doing right afterwards.
Yeah, and you weren't doing it at somebody else's expense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just can't ever feel good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It really felt like I was able to be with my experience, and that part of me that had been hurting was getting to enjoy
yes.
what was going on.
Yes. Yeah.
And having a say in what was going to happen.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of what we were talking about earlier with Albert, that there's the, you know, there's a part of you who has, well, and with John, too, as a matter of fact, and we'll get Mary into the mix before it's over, but there's a part of you who has a lot of energy and is really excited about stuff.
Yeah.
And that's fun because there she is and she's doing all this stuff and feels, and then slowly it gets taken over.
Yes.
By whatever that force is. And, and before long, you're not actually enjoying yourself. You're sliding into not taking care of yourself, being stressed, being pushed, being rushed. And by the time you realize what's happening, your only choice is, I got to cancel all this stuff. Then you start feeling good because you're now in sync, more in sync with life. Mm-hmm. Now, it would be possible for you to do all of that without any of this underlying conditioned suffering. In other words, there are times when you have tremendous energy and you can do a lot of stuff. But you have to be sensitive to, and now I don't have a lot of energy.
Right.
You know, not letting that energy be usurped by this conditioning.
Yeah.
And also being ready to say, you know, just like you did when you were three. You never said this. You just acted it out. You feel really good. You just run and play as hard as you can. And then you get tired.
Mm-hmm.
And you lie down, you take a nap, or you color, or whatever it is. As adults, because we are listening to this voice of the illusion of a separate self, we're being driven constantly to use our life force in ways that serve conditioning.
Yes. And when it feels so great, when the life force is flowing through me, conditioning just likes to creep in and say, look at what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Look at how great I am. And it doesn't have anything to do with conditioning.
Yeah, yeah. It's important to see, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's something I'm really working with right now. I mean, it's a big focus.
Mm-hmm.
I like to watch that.
Mm-hmm. So it's as if you were dancing, and and you're going to dance all evening. But the person who's playing the music keeps putting on different kinds of music. Now, if you're operating out of conditioning, you'll just do the same dance regardless of what the music is.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. But if you're really present, you'll hear the music change.
Uh-huh.
And so this is a really fast dance. You know, this is salsa. This is, oh my God, a polka.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought? And then it's a slow dance. And
that's
if you're tuned into the music, then you can enjoy all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're tuned into conditioning, well, the odds are good. You'll be doing the same dance and you won't be enjoying any of it.
Yeah, that is so exactly what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to mention something that happened yesterday where I was offered a job. Well, I decided not to take it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just graduating school, which is why I had been so stressed. And I had to sit, and I was in center, and center said no.
Mm.
And it was the...
No, don't take this job.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And just what an odd sensation that is. Because my head would really talk me into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's money, it's all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart was like, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
No, let's not do that.
Let's not do that, yeah. And it comes from a quiet place.
Yeah.
If somebody said, now, Rebecca, how do you know you're not making a big mistake? You'd have to say, well,
my heart told me.
Yeah, and I really don't know.
Yeah.
It's just that my heart said, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could be the biggest mistake of your life, but
doesn't
didn't feel like it.
No.
Yeah.
It really doesn't feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like everything's going to be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for letting us know.
Yeah, thank you. I'm having a great time with your radio show and with awareness practice in general.
Good.
Yeah.
Us too.
Good.
All right. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thanks. Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. It's always great to hear from people who are so excited about the show and waking up.
And about awareness practice and all of that stuff.
Yes.
It is a, it's tremendously fun for me to, and for you too, I know, but I'll just speak for myself, to be able to be in conversation like this with people that, I mean, you know, Rebecca's in New Hampshire, John is in L.A., Mary's in Boulder, Albert's in New Jersey. You know, it's not like next week I'm going to see any of these people.
Yes.
And yet we can have this conversation, and we can be in conversation all over the country, all together.
Yes.
It's a gift. It's a really remarkable thing that I'm incredibly grateful for, tremendously grateful for.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
All this technology.
Yeah.
Phones.
Yeah.
They don't even have to be listening at the same time because they can go to the archives and...
Yeah.
Possibilities are endless.
Yeah. Because I think that one of the things that happens, now there are a number of people, of course, who live in places where there are a lot of other people who are doing awareness practice. But there are a lot of people who live in places where they feel like they're the only one.
Yes.
And this is a little connection.
Yes. Yes. And I would project that we have an email from a person who's in that place.
Uh-huh.
Would you like to hear an email question?
Yes, please.
Great. Dear Sherry, greetings from Nashville. Nashville, Tennessee, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense to uproot one's entire life in order to connect with the Zen community? I ask because I find myself longing to share space with people that resonate on a deep level with me. I've been unable to find a Buddhist community here in Nashville that I click with. I was part of your recent email class centered on projection. And while engaging with the class, I experienced a period of growth and healing. It was the first time that my practice was something other than singular. It was nice, and I felt one of a group rather than one of a one. I am uncertain about my motives and my sanity, and I am unclear how to proceed in order to find some clarity about this matter. I would appreciate any thoughts you may have to offer. I'm 34 and single and have no children. I don't know if these facts impact your thoughts on the matter. Thank you.
Well, you know, the Buddha, or maybe you don't know. I don't know.
I didn't know the Buddha.
Well, yes, that is an excellent point. He left wife and small child in order to pursue his spiritual path. We know that Jesus apparently made an awful lot of family members unhappy by doing what he did. And so there's really quite a good long tradition of people leaving whatever when they feel pulled to pursue then however a person wants to talk about that and whatever their tradition is. And, of course, I'm a firm believer in that. Now, I understand it's trickier for people when there are children or there are spouses or that sort of thing. But somebody was telling me earlier today about something, a movie, a TV show or something that they were watching, in which one of the characters is a woman who got pregnant by her first boyfriend when she was 16, and they got married, and they spent the rest of their lives together, and she was unhappy the entire time. Mm-hmm. And they had more children and this sort of thing. You know, that's, gosh, I don't really personally know what that is serving other than karma. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that it... Now, I can see staying in a situation and using that as an opportunity to become happy if you do. To stay in a situation because conditioning says this is what you need to do, this is the right thing to do, this is the good person thing to do, you know, that's what people do. It's Rebecca, you know, just getting out of school and here's a job and, well, you should take it because that's... It's money. That's what we're doing. But those of us who realize that there's an opportunity to do something other than just put it, you know, get in the traces and start putting one foot in front of the other until we get to the cliff, and then, you know, now I've got lemmings in traces. But you're right there with me.
Yes.
If it occurs to us that there might be something other to do with our lives, something that when we get to the end of our lives we're going to feel better about than having given our lives to something that is not meaningful to us, then I would say do whatever you need to do to get where you want to be, to do what it is that you want to do. Mm-hmm. Because even when you're 34 years old, life is short.
Yes.
And so why would a person not do that?
Yes.
You know, for myself, I would crawl across country to get to people who could help me wake up and end suffering.
Yes.
And, of course, that's what I did. When when that occurred to me as a possibility, that's exactly what I did. I just stopped doing everything else in my life. I went to the person who then became my teacher. I said, this is what I want to do. And I've never stopped and never looked back. And there were a lot of hard choices along the way. There's no question about it. But there are always hard choices in life. And ultimately, I would say even the people who had the best reason for being disappointed with the choices that I made are happy that I made them.
Wow.
So, you know, family members who could have said, you know, well, I wish you had prioritized me more, now say, gee, I'm glad you did what you did. And,
wow.
And so I could not be more supportive of that sort of activity.
Wow.
Many people know that I'm quite passionate right now about this Peace Center in Assisi. And,
yes.
I get, you know, I get the whole range of responses, but everything from, wow, that is truly amazing, to what are you doing? Because, you know, this is the time when people would say, well, you know, retirement would be a good thing to be focusing on. Or what about all of the, you know, what about the monastery? What about the life that you committed to? And, you know, from my perspective, all I ever committed to was life.
Mm-hmm.
Not a structure, not a content, mm-hmm. not a anything. Awakening and ending suffering, mm-hmm. attempting to be with life and allow it to live through me in whatever way it chooses to do. So I would give a big thumbs up.
Big
Yes, for doing whatever it is that one's heart draws one to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was struck when you were sharing that. The sense that the people who you project may have been disappointed by the choices you made are so supportive.
Yes. And back with the Buddha and Jesus, you know, at the
yes.
end of the story, their families were gathered around. Jesus's mother was right there with him mm-hmm. at the end and through the whole thing. The Buddha's wife and son both became his students.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always popular to make those kinds of choices. It's often not popular. But if we do, it's good not to assume it's going to have a bad ending.
Yes.
Awakening and ending suffering might actually be a kindness to our loved ones.
Yes.
Just might.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I get a sense of something bigger.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. And our hearts are always drawing us to something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And our egocentric karmic conditioning is always trying to stuff us into the smallest space possible. That's what we're up against with awareness
yes.
practice. It's choosing the expansive, you know, facing the fears that arise with that, and, choosing conscious, compassionate awareness.
Wow.
Yes.
What a great place to end.
Let's do that.
Let's do that. Let's do it again next week.
Let's do our very best.
Great. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us, all of our callers, all of our listeners today. Lori, Jay, there every week.
Aren't they good?
Week in, week out.
And truly. Now, you know, we couldn't do it without them.
That's true.
It's a true story. We're not just saying that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I can't be here and there and,
yeah, and
all those buttons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And if people want to reach us, they can email us at openair@kzsu.org. And the archives are available for previous shows, and that's at sherryhuber.com, C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. And we'll see you next week.
Good night.
Good night.